From the Anti-Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Anti-Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 2nd, 2021. You're listening to the still surviving PokerCast of Chris Cosenza, Scott Long. I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long, and happy April Fool's Day to everyone.
Yeah, you know, you had that on the file, too, that it was April 1st, and I'm like, no.
Oh, that's right, yeah, April 2nd, yes, you're right.
And I was going to, earlier in the show, before we started the show, I mean, Scott and I were talking, and I was like, it's my show, and you're like, your show? And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's not my show. Like, it was my show to be over years ago, and you started laughing.
story checks out.
But I do need you to congratulate me, though, because... Okay. I've successfully built the world's first time machine.
Excellent.
And so we were talking about earth-shattering news before the show.
Out of a DeLorean?
I was going to tell you it was made out of a DeLorean, but it's made out of a Honda HR-V, so it's not as sexy.
Are you telling me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
So this morning, to test it out, I got into my time machine. I set it for 15 years ago. Okay. And I'm telling you, it worked. Because first thing I did was I got out of my HR-V, check my news feed, and sure enough, there's a story there about Phil Hellmuth whining that he gets no respect, right? And that he's the best player in the world, and Dan Negron is complaining about him, saying that he'd get more respect if he was more humble. I mean, so this obviously confirmed my time machine. I mean, they couldn't possibly be still arguing about this publicly 15 years later, right? I mean, this has to be that my time machine worked, so I'm so excited. So,
yeah.
Apparently that, you know, the $100,000 thing that we talked about a few weeks ago, where they're going to play heads up or whatever, and that, I don't know, it's called the big stakes or high stakes feud or something. So I guess Hellmuth came back from like 3,000 chips. He had 3,000 chips to 97,000 against Negreanu, and he beat him. So it was like this big thing, but I checked all the quotes from the story, and that's all the quotes were. They're like, yeah, I still get no respect. I'm the best player in the world. And he's like, he'd get more respect if he would just, you know, be humble and stop being a loudmouth. And I'm like, how are we still reading these stories 15 years later?
Well, two comments on what you just said. One, I need to borrow the phone booth because I got to do my history report later today.
Okay.
At San Dimas High.
Yeah. Yep.
And then, two, I mean, seriously, though, I mean, this is the problem that Hellmuth has. He has very successfully and very profitably, I would argue, created this persona.
Sure.
That works for him, right? We've already discussed this. It's like he's like a pro wrestler, right? He has this persona that he tries out in public and private. He's not that person. But it works for him in public, right?
Yeah.
So you can't have that persona and benefit from that persona and then also be Mr. Boy Scout, right?
Right.
So you got to choose one or the other. So you go down one path. You can't have it both ways. What's that saying? You can't have your cake and eat it too.
I just don't understand why it's even still coming up. We all know what it is. Daniel knows what it is, and they're constantly arguing. They want to stay in the spotlight. They want to stay in the, you know, 15 years later, it's the same conversation. It's just, you know. So then I was like, all right, well, let me go back to the present, and then I'll set my time machine again, and I'll set it for a month ago, just to see if it wasn't a yearly thing. I want to make sure I could do it for any period of time I wanted. And sure enough, it worked again, because there was this story about this company called Element buying World Poker Tour. And, I mean, it had to work, right? Because it could still be talking about that story a month later, right? But that'll be up later on in the show. And I'm pretty sure I could have done this with all the items from today's show, to be honest with you.
Right, exactly, right? Yeah, there's a lot of history here on today's show. A lot of history is going nowhere. How's that?
Exactly. It's this stalled, I don't know, it's just ridiculous. I mean, these stories are, they're hilarious because you know nothing's going to happen. I don't know. All right, so go ahead.
It's hilarious and it's also frustrating that this is what our show has come down to.
I know.
Retreads of stories that don't seem to be moving anywhere. But
I keep trying.
Not only we've captured everybody's attention.
I keep trying to avoid the train wreck, and you keep wanting to persist. Nevertheless, he persisted.
You'd never look away, right? All right, the Commonwealth of Kentucky is seeking to receive the first $100 million it has owned from the $1.3 billion judgment it won from PokerStars for operating illegally in the state. Flutter Entertainment, my new favorite name for a company. The current owner of the online poker site, who did not own it when it was sued by Kentucky, says it is considering all options, including appealing the case to the U.S. Supreme Court.
I would, right?
Yeah, I think Aaron Sorkin's going to be able to make a movie out of this.
That's right. Man, I mean, I don't see how I would pay a dime to them. And why don't we call them the Commonwealth? It's Kentucky.
Hey, I don't want to get sued. They sued and won $1.3 billion from PokerStars. Who knows how much they can get from a company as valuable as ours?
I know, exactly.
So I'm going to play nice with the Commonwealth up there.
I agree with Flutter, though. I wouldn't pay a dime.
Yep.
Right?
I guess at some point you have to if you're forced to, but it does seem unfortunate that they've got wrapped into this. So
it's like, what are they going to do to them though? They're not based here.
I'm sure there's stuff they can do. Yeah. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a money man.
You're not? How did I get into business with you if you're not a lawyer or a money man?
The only money man I am is when my wife gives me my allowance for the day. So.
And you spend it on hot dogs.
And ice cream cone. So. But only when the guy drives down the street with his bells ringing. All right, Texans, who want to see casinos allowed within the Lone Star State's borders have probably the most promising news yet. Bills filed in the state's House and Senate would allow full-scale casino gaming at casinos in the four largest cities, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, and my favorite, Austin. While the legislation has not moved anywhere positive yet, the Las Vegas Sands Corp, which used to own the owns the Venetian, is spending millions of dollars on lobbyists to help the legislation along. So,
of course it
is. So now we have big money flooding into the state to make this happen, whereas before I don't believe we've ever had that.
And it's the reasoning behind them not having these casinos all these years, not just because they're conservative, but also because the archaic thought process that goes into all the road gambling and all the crap that happened back in the day. And I would assume that's the reason why they haven't embraced this yet, right?
Yeah, and so here's the thing for our poker audience, right? So I personally am not seeing this as a positive for poker in Texas. Now, I could be wrong. We don't know where this is going yet. You know, government's slow. It doesn't always work. So these bills might not go anywhere, like all the ones previously have not gone anywhere. The fact that there's really big money involved, though, makes me think that it might. But, you know, here's the thing with these big gaming companies is they like to operate monopolies. That's what we see here in Florida with the Seminole Tribe. They want to be the only game in town and will continue to spend the big money. And once you have casinos, you make a lot more big money, right? Mm-hmm. So. And then you continue to spend that money to lobby to be sure that you're the only game in town. And I can only imagine that if this passes and just so happens the Las Vegas Sands Corp is the only one licensed to run four casinos, which could be a possibility, right?
Right.
That you then would turn your lobbyist money toward the private poker club that are operating now, a lot of them in somewhat shaky legal ground, right?
Yeah.
And if they succeed in getting them all shut down, then you're forced to go to these four casinos in these big cities, and that's not convenient at all for poker players. Particularly if, like, say, you're in El Paso, right? It's a plane ride to one of these cities from El Paso, not a drive, right? So I don't know. I would temper folks' excitement there in Texas. You know, unless you know you love playing blackjack and slots, then obviously then this is a good development. But from a poker perspective, I'm a little concerned about it. So
yeah, that's a great insight, and I mean I don't know if that would if it would ever come to fruition that it would just be one company that has these casinos, but it would clearly put a crimp in the local clubs that are going on there. And geez, yeah.
Well, even if it's not just one, and you're probably right, it wouldn't just be one. It could be up to, you know, four, you know, one in each city or maybe more depending on how the legislation allows.
Right.
Those folks have a different legal structure or legal, what's the word I'm looking for, outlook than the private clubs. So they will see them as competition, and I can't imagine that they will not seek to either put them out of business or make it very hard for them to operate. So folks have to come to the casinos instead.
Right.
And really, that's the way you've seen this happen in a lot of other states, how they quote-unquote sold casino gaming to residents who may not be as excited about it. It's always, hey, we're going to limit it. right?
Yeah.
It's only going to be a couple casinos. It's only going to be in these big cities. We're not going to terrorize your small town with casinos and blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, after you get approved, then it ends up expanding and going everywhere else, right? So,
yeah, because they say, well, you already have these. So, you know, I mean, it's once you're in, that's it. It's like water leaking through a dam. I mean, once it comes out, it just never stops.
But it's always a very effective sales pitch, and people keep falling for it. Mm-hmm. So that would be part of, I can't imagine, their sales pitch is, hey, let's clean up all this quote-unquote illegal gambling around the state, and let's focus it in four casinos in the big towns where all the crime and stuff is already. That's the argument, really.
Yeah, I know.
All right, Element Partners' revised bid for Allied Esports poker businesses, including the World Poker Tour, has been declared superior to a revised counteroffer from Bally's Corp., and the company is back in the lead to buy the Poker Tour for $105 million. Next week's show preview, Bally's Corp. will be back in the lead with $110 million.
So, I think we asked this last week. We weren't sure, but when's this deadline? I mean, come on. How long is this going to go for?
At this time, there wasn't a deadline. And I don't know whether Bally's Corp. has a deadline. I assume they do, too. So, again, like I said, I'm half joking by saying that next week we will have another update, something, another one. It's really getting crazy at this point. I'm like, literally every week there's a new leader in this, and wow, can you imagine if like a third company jumps in here at some point?
Really? I know, it will be 2022 before we actually get someone to buy the company.
Yeah. So, if I'm Allied board of directors here, man, I am just loving life. I have nonstop popcorn I'm popping at home. Got my feet kicked up on the Barca lounger. And just enjoying this ride, because this is crazy.
I remember when they first started the WPT, and you know, they talked to the owners and stuff, and they were all just like, you know, we're losing money just to have this tour, you know, but we think it's important. And then, you know, they had their money from other ventures, so it wasn't that bad. But it was like turning on a faucet and just letting the money go. And now they're making all this money on it, but I would imagine it's been sold numerous times since then, and I wonder how much they regret it now that they don't own it. You know, that maybe they could have gotten a big payday finally if they had just stuck with it a little bit longer, or they would have bled so much money that this would have made them break even or lose money still anyway. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like any investment, like your house, right? You know, imagine whoever sold us our house 20 years ago is regretting now knowing what it was, but you didn't want to own that house for 20 more years to get to this point either, right?
Yeah, so, exactly.
That's a little bit of both, I think, so.
Well, maybe we'll have a conclusion to this story soon. I don't know. I'd be real interested to know what the deadline is or how that deadline is set up. Like, is it every time there's a counteroffer, they get another 2 weeks to come up with a bid in perpetuity, or is there going to be an actual date?
At some point, I think both of these companies bidding have to have a dollar amount that they've decided is too much, right? So at some points, it's just like, again, it's like an auction that's playing out not like an auction. At some point, somebody's going to tap out and say, all right, forget it. I was good at $105 million, but I'm not going to pay $1
billion. So one of the things that we haven't discussed, but you and I have discussed privately, is that we kind of think that the reason they're so interested in buying this company is probably for sports betting, too, right? That they can use that sort of brand and move forward with
it. Well, yeah. I mean, the gaming industry is really moving that way. I mean, if you talk about a big growth sector in gaming, it's certainly sports wagering. Because it's been added to so many states now. I mean, most of our listeners probably, literally most of them probably could have gone to a sports book in their own state to wager on the March Madness this year.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think, because a year ago, probably almost none of you could have done that, right? So that is the growth. Now, what a tie-in is with poker, I don't know. But obviously, there's some folks out there that probably have figured that out, and that's part of it. So, I don't know. We'll see. But something's there. There's something there that both these companies are very interested in. So,
okay, any updates? Papes, the Annie Up Fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, 26th of every month, and they rotate disciplines of the main tournament, followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Annie Up Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call the floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. You can check out our 11 vintage Annie Up logo designs on merchandise at annieupmagazine.com/shop. to buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, much more with your choice of Antioch Magazine, Antioch Pokercast, or Antioch Poker Tour logos. If you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or call to floor submission, email us at podcast@antiochmagazine.com or post in the Antioch Fans Group on Facebook. Each week we spotlight a listener who emails us at podcast@antiochmagazine.com, and if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with call to floor and hand of the week, we send them something cool. This is Michael Cantor. He's been around for a long time.
Has been, yes.
Yeah, almost since the beginning, maybe. He says he's been playing a weekly online game during the pandemic with a group of friends, most of whom I've known since I was 10, with a few others who I've gotten to know pretty well. We do a sit-and-go and generally have 7 to 10 players. The first couple of months, I was a consistent loser. The next few months, I bubbled nearly every tourney. In the past 3 months, however, I have become a consistent winner, winning or chopping at least half of the tourneys we've played in 2021. I figure this is because I now know how people play and can play the person, not the cards. Because some of the group don't really care about improving and are just there to have fun. And because I've mainly avoided or recovered from bad beats, I don't really want to spend a lot more time playing online, but do you have any advice on how I could measure myself against other players and see if I'm improving or just having a great run with variants in my favor? I figured I could try Papes, but was wondering if there were some other alternatives.
Well, what I told Michael was Papes is probably what I would suggest. I generally don't suggest free money poker as a way of gauging how you're playing against other folks or how good you become in any way. The difference with Papes, though, is these are our listeners. They are most of them are fairly decent poker players, right?
Yeah.
And they are there to be competitive, to win. So this is not them just like splashing around free chips and, you know, waiting until tomorrow to refresh their account to play again, right? So these are folks that are trying to win, and I think it's a really good opportunity to play for free against decent players who are trying to win. So, and that's really what he's trying to look at, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing, too, is there are some online sites that still go, obviously, that you could join and play that way. I know he said he's not really fond of playing a lot more online, but that's really the only way to measure yourself against players that you know are taking it seriously if you don't believe the Papes crowd is playing it seriously, which I believe they are. They try to be player of the year. They're a pretty strong community that gets there every single month, 3 times a month to play, so... obviously, they're not just fooling around. But, I mean, unless there's a public room that you want to go to, and I don't know what your situation is with where a poker room is around near you or what you feel about COVID or anything like that. But other than that, you know, find a bunch of friends who have gotten the shot if that's something that's bothering you, because obviously you brought up the pandemic. You know, make them all get the shot. And then when you get together, you're playing legitimately, you know, in person. But again, I don't know what that even means because you're still playing them online, so they're the same player. So I don't know if that would determine whether or not you're getting better. I think you're just right now you're getting better at playing these people. You know, when I first started in our home game, which we don't ever hold anymore, but when we did, I lost every week or every month because I just didn't understand how you guys played or whatever. But once I figured it out, I usually left our poker room with $30 in my pocket more than I came with, or, you know, sometimes I'd have better, but I hardly ever lost. Like, I didn't have really big losing sessions because I kind of figured out how people were playing and how they played me. So I didn't feel like it was making me a better poker player. It just made me better in that bubble. So I think you need to get out, really. I think you need to, because like I said, even if you had those friends getting together in person and play, they're still the same people. They're going to have the same tendencies they did online as they did, as they will in person. So if that's not an option to you, then it's got to be more online play at a real site that, you know that you can put some pressure on somebody by raising them with, you know. So that's what I would say. I would say if you don't have the option of playing live at a real casino or a real card room, then I would join an online room that you feel comfortable with. That's the only thing I could think of.
Yeah, or I mean, obviously he's playing in a home game now. I mean, there might be a different home game that he can join. They are harder to find, particularly now, although hopefully here this summer we'll be able to play home games again and not worry about it. But That is the challenge. So, you know, in the absence of all that, the easiest thing right now is to jump on Papes and three nights a month, as you mentioned, see where you are with that. At least, if nothing else, it's something to do right now until you figure out another avenue to compare yourself against other folks, right?
Exactly. Hey, we get to complete O'Malley's move today. It's always cool. So we're going to listen to part one now, and we'll see you on the other side.
And welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. We've reached the final episode of this saga against the same player during the same $1, $2 No Limit Hold'em casino cash game. We've bought in again for $200 and are currently stuck $400 on the night. Our opponent has once again changed seats. He's done this periodically and is now in the MP. We look down in the under the gun with $200 and a gorgeous pair of black kings. We make it $8 to go, which has become the table standard. I like a raise to $10 or $12 here, but I found that most of the time that gets instamux all over the table, and kings are a hand we need to extract value with if we're going to be a winning player. It's folded to the MP who calls the $8. He's still been living large and currently has north of $600 in his stack. The button also calls. The blinds fold, the pot is around $25, and the flop is the 9 of diamonds, 7 of spades, tray of hearts. I like this flop for our hand. We make it $20 to go, leaving us $172 behind. The MP, the villain from the previous two episodes, shoves. The button sighs, rolls his eyes, and folds. So, here we are again. What's the move?
Well, he's burned us twice by overshoving with a better hand than we have, and I said last week I'm not falling for it again. And a single overpair isn't enough to get me to change my mind. I'm folding.
Okay, I'm calling. Cause
what?
You mocked O'Malley
and me mercilessly last time. And now you're calling?
Well, because if I lose, I'm leaving. So I can't lose three hands in a row to this guy.
Shame on you. And we'll be trying, shame on me.
Yeah, but I didn't say anything about a third time. So last week I was right. So I'm trying to make it so I'm right two out of three. So really, I mean, if I call here and lose, I mean, that's it. I mean, I just, this guy has my number, table change, go home, something. But I don't know how this guy is going to be beating us again. If he's got a set or something, I'll vomit all over the table, and then I'll leave. So, and if I don't have to vomit, I'll force myself to vomit and put my finger down my throat because it's disgusting. But come on. We have a way over pair to a absolutely dry board, and the guy is just playing on our mind here, you know? I think he's got a huge stack now, and I'm going to have to just call and see what happens. So, all right, here we go. Here's part two.
Hello again. Did we learn our lesson here? Is the third time the charm? The only real draw on this board is 10-8. What hand simply calls a raise preflop and then feels compelled to shove here? Pocket tens? Pocket jacks? Pocket eights? Is he putting me on ace-king again? He couldn't have another set, right? I wish I could tell you that I analyzed this, but I didn't. I snap called. Our opponent quickly rolls over the 9 of spades, 9 of hearts, and after it's all said and done, we've accomplished a feat we had never done before in the 15 years we've been playing this game. We stacked off 3 times in the same session to the same opponent, all in the span of about 3 hours. Does this man own my soul? All right, well, I know when I'm not welcome somewhere. We're packing it in early. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes nightmare sessions happen. It's best to just get them out of the way. Thanks for letting me tell my bad beat / cooler stories. I hope to see you on the felt.
Tough break, but he was telling us all night this is his MO. Sometimes we just have to learn from our mistakes.
I'm out of here like Kojak, man. I just can't believe it. How ridiculous is it? It's almost like it's a made-up situation. I mean, this is stuff that you can't make up.
But here's the thing. We talked about this last week, and we're going to talk about it again. This guy has our number. He knows we're going to fall for this. We've fallen for it 3 times in a row. And, I mean, here's the thing. So, if he does it the fourth time and we don't fall for it, guess what? He's way ahead of the game by playing it this way, right?
I know.
He's got our stack three times. He can keep doing this to us all the time for the rest of our lives and still be ahead of the game with it.
The funny thing is the one time you don't call him, then he turns over the bluff, and you're just steaming.
Well, and that's the mental chess that's going on here, right?
Yeah.
I mean, now we're burned so badly that I can't imagine O'Malley calling this ever again. So that's now add to the opponent. Now he has to sense that we've gotten to that point, right?
Yeah.
He sensed that he's been able to pull it off three times now, so he needs to size up O'Malley next time and see if he can pull it off a fourth time. If he doesn't think he can pull it off a fourth time, now what do? Now you shove with nothing, because you know you're going to fold. It's really, really, I mean, I feel bad for O'Malley, because this is tough, but this guy really does have his number, and as George Costanza would say, he has hand.
It's unbelievable. Hey, did you ever watch Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I love Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I just started watching it. I know this isn't the show. What? The show's short. I know, and I'm like five episodes in, and all it does is contribute to my anxiety. And I know that's by design, but I don't know if I can last any more than a few more episodes without just being like, okay, I either have to see a doctor and get some medication from when I watch this, or I can't watch it.
You're going to stick along long enough to be introduced to Leon, man, because Leon makes that show later on.
All right. Yeah, I'm only six episodes in, and I know you like it because Cheryl's on there too, I'm sure.
Oh,
I know. But I was just like, this is every single episode. It's the same. I just want to rip my skin off when I'm watching it. And I know that's by design. I know that's why he's doing it. And is it still on? Like, that show's around for 10 years or so.
Yeah, so they just had a season wrap up during quarantine, so I don't know if he's going to do another one, but they took a couple years off for a while. So.
Okay, all right. Well,
so you're actually lucky because you can go straight through all of it.
Yeah, lucky.
The rest had to wait for a while. So.
You're lucky because they're going to give you the injection instead of putting you in the chair. You know, it's going to be over quicker, you know, and you won't feel a thing rather than burning.
Oh, man.
All right, sorry. I just had to, because you brought up Costanza having hand, and that made me think of Larry David, and then watch an episode.
Yeah, you did
the
a little Kevin Bacon 6 degrees thing going on. I got you.
<That's> right.
All right, sign with the advancedpokertraining.com. Hand of the week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. All right, so here's the deal. Jerry Haynes has sent us not one hand, Chris, not two, not four, not nine, 10 hands.
Gee.
Because he heard our friend Brendan that we did nine hands with Brendan, and he wanted to do one better. So we sent us 10.
It's like the
competition.
It's like we're in the showcase showdown, and we just add $1 or whatever that is, the thing at Price is Right, right?
I have a feeling we have our own Element Bally's bidding war going to be going on here. So pretty sure that Brendan's going to send us 11 hands this week, but it's going to take us 10 weeks to get through this one. So
that's right.
We will know for sure. So, 10 hands, and we're doing the exact same thing I did with Brennan. I have not read any of them. So here's the real pressure on Jerry. I mean, anybody can send us one more hand than Brennan did. But all of his hands were quality.
Yeah.
So we'll find out whether all 10 of Jerry's hands are quality or whether there's a stinker poo or two in this mix. So.
Well, did Jerry lace this email with a caveat that says some of these suck, or did he like try to?
No, I think he was. Let me go back and just see. No, he provided no bragging.
Okay,
just enhance. So
okay,
so yeah, so at least he's got that going for him. He's not setting these up as anything more than what they might be.
Excellent.
All right, here we go. Hand one. So he says, overall notes, this is an online home game that they play on something called PokerNow.club. Actually, never heard of that, have you?
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, the game is, while the game is 25 cents, 50 cents, there is a lot of action and plays more like a 50 cent, $1 game. Most hands are re-raised pre-flopped and three bets are not uncommon. We play weekly and therefore have a good handle on all the players in the game. All right, so that's a setup.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Hand number one. It seems like I've been running up against the nuts all night. Hey, talk to O'Malley about that.
Yeah, really.
After initial buy-in of $100 and two additional $100 add-ons, I currently sit at 138, down 162 on the night. The other gun plus one player who ends up being the main villain in this hand is fairly new to our home game, our games, and has run terrible the first couple of games with us. In this game, though, variance has turned around for him, and he has us covered with a stack of $260.95 after his initial buy-in of $50. Wow, that's a pretty good day.
Wow, 5X. That's huge.
Yeah, really. All right, we are six-handed, and we are under the gun with the Jack of Clubs, Ten of Clubs.
Yeah.
Man, Danger, Will Robinson.
Huh?
Danger, Will Robinson.
I know. I mean, I like this hand, but I don't know if I want to be the first in with it. I know it's six-handed.
So in trouble.
Well,
it's the Black Widow for me.
You know, it depends on how I'm playing and what kind of persona I have at the hand. You know, I mean, because there are times where if I'm like, let's just go back to like when we used to have cruises and we would play. And I would, if I am just jovial with everyone and I'm winning pots and I'm expect to speculate and I like to just limp sometimes and whatever, it just depends. You know, I mean, there are times where I just limp and, you know, I'll have a hand like this or I'll limp and I'll have a big hand and they won't know because I'm playing a lot of hands because I've won a bunch of pots and I'm up. If I am struggling and I'm down a bunch, I don't like to play out of desperation and I wouldn't probably play this hand. So I guess it just depends on the situation. If I'm in the type of situation where, cause we're down now in this game and we're down more than we have too. I mean, we were down almost 100, we're on 160 something. So I don't like to just force it because I need to try to rally. I mean, that's desperation. Then you start making mistakes and stuff. So I tend to think that I would, if I can get away with a limp, I would. I just don't know if I want to raise with this hand, especially since he said three bets are not uncommon. And where am I going to be if the button now makes it 6X to R3X or something? And then I've wasted more money and I'm already down. I'm going to call, be out of position and make a mistake because it's going to come 10 high and he's going to have queens and we're going to lose even more. So, you know, it really depends on the environment I'm in. So I'm not, whenever we talk about hands like this, I don't want it to ever be, oh, that's concrete because that's what they said to do. That's not it. It's just in this situation, I'm down. I know it's six-handed, but it seems like the other guy's running well that we're going to end up being with two in this hand, which sucks. Not that we know that beforehand, obviously. But I feel like this is the type of hand where maybe I can make something happen, but if I can get away with limping sometimes, I will, just because I'm already down a bunch. I don't want to put in, you know, $2, $3, and then have somebody come over the top for 10, and then I feel like, all right, well, I really got to make something happen here. So then I'm calling, and then I'm just getting bled to draw, you know. So I want to try to limp with this if I'm going to play it. Otherwise, I'm going to fold it. I really don't feel like raising and getting re-raised and then being out of position with a crap hand.
All right, so here's the thing. The one iron rock principle of my poker is to play pre-flop the same with every hand. Mm. So I can't allow myself to want to limp with this hand because I would not limp with aces or kings under the gun. I would do my standard 2.5x raise in a tournament and cash game, whatever the table standard is, right? So if I'm going to play, I have to do that. And you're right. So if three bets are not uncommon, I have to assume that I'm going to get raised somewhere along the way. So now that's what I have to decide. So, you know, I mentioned this is my personal Black Widow. It looks so good and I can't lay off it, but I know I'm going to be destroyed. So really at this point I have to fold this just because of my personal attachment to the hand and my personal not ability to get away from it. But generally speaking, we like Jack 10 because, you know, it's the nut straight whenever you have it. The fact that it's suited now too, which helps it as well too. But it can get you in trouble, and it's gotten me in more trouble than I'm willing to. So for me, I'm folding here. But again, I will continue to preach to folks on the show, play the same way, pre-flop all the time, and you're going to be a better player. You start trying to mix things up, that's when smarter players figure that out and you get in trouble. So
let me ask you something, since we're always talking about this. What is there a scenario in tournament play for you where you limp? And I'm not talking about the blinds. I'm talking about, is there any scenario where you limp?
Sure. Yeah, I would say a tournament's different than cash. And different stages of the tournament are different. I mean, you know, so when I say I'm going to play it the same way all the time, I mean, obviously when I get below 20 big blinds, if I'm going to be in, I'm shoving, right?
Right.
So that's That's a bigger bet than I normally would. I would say that doesn't give away any information, because I would imagine any opponent looking at my stack would say, hey, that's the reasonable thing to do with that stack. You know, you're not going to do your normal raise there, right? So limping, the probably would, well, yeah, probably.
Okay, so the reason why I'm asking is because, well...
But again, I mean, so limping, I mean, it depends. I mean, you mean limping first in the pot?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Is there any chance where you limp first in?
First in, no.
So you always raise. Even if it's a cash game, you won't limp. You'll always raise no matter what.
I don't see any reason to limp when you're first in, because you're giving up a powerful outcome there, right? When you raise, you can take it down right now and win the pot. Now, I know there are hands where you want action, so that's why you would limp there, but generally speaking, when you raise, you have two ways of winning the pot. Either you get everybody to fold and you win, or you end up beating them at the end with a better hand, right? So we're limping. You're not gonna that first option's off the table. Mm-hmm. So why would you want to take that first option off the table?
Okay, very good. Just want to hear your thinking, because I know a lot of times when people talk about doing the same raise all the time, but they don't talk about doing the same thing all the time. Like, they don't always say, every time you play a hand, it must be for a raise if you're first to enter. They just say, if you're going to raise, always raise the same amount so you're not giving away the strength of your hand.
But, sure, but
you can limp with aces and try to trap somebody or whatever, and they don't know what you have, so you're mixing it up a little bit.
Right, but you're mixing it up, and people are now going to know a pattern. Now you have a pattern, right?
Well, so, unless you're looking at your watch like Carrington and you're raising at or limping at, you know what I mean? You don't know what the pattern is anymore.
Well, yeah, but I mean, and if you don't know what your pattern is, then that doesn't mean, I mean, it's going to be pretty useless to your opponents to know the pattern, right? But again, it's not a matter of just the amount, it's what you do. So, you know, because what's going to happen is, particularly when you're under the gun, I think a lot of players pay much more attention to what players do under the gun and on the button than anywhere else on the table. So, because under the gun, you always are like, all right, that must be a big hand there. In the button, you always assume that someone's stealing, right? Or you're weaker, right? So I think those are the two spots where opponents really pay attention to what your cards are when you turn them over at the end of the hand and try to log that away in their head to know. So so if I notice that somebody who raises under the gun all the time and then now limps in with Jack 10, that's going to be information for me to know that, hey, this is not somebody that's limping with aces. This is somebody that's limping with a hand that they're not comfortable with, and I need to play back at them.
But could you then do O'Malley's opponent and now raise with crap and now limp with aces? You know, I'm just, you mix up what you do with the hands, but
sure.
I mean, there's a huge way of throwing them off your scent. The other thing I want to say, too, is that we got to remember this is six-handed, so when we say we have Jack 10 under the gun,
true.
If it's a full table, it's really Jack 10 middle position. So,
right.
You know,
yep.
I mean... I don't know. I don't know how I would play this hand. I think that I'm down already. If these guys are looking to be a little passive and they just want to get a bunch of people in the pot, then I've got the right odds to kind of play connectors like this. I know I'm not in position, but, you know, I just don't know. The way I've been running and the way the other guys seem to be running, I don't know if I want to just sit there and raise. But it's such a juicy hand, like you said, six-handed, that right. it might produce a hand that could get me a lot of money. Like, what if it comes ace-king-queen and the guy calls my raise with ace-king, or the guy raises behind me and then I call, you know what I mean? So there's all these scenarios that we're trying to envision to double through and get our money back. But at the same time, I just wondered if you limped at all ever, because to me, every time you enter the pot, you raise, that also tells me something too, that, you know what I mean? It tells me that if you don't ever change the way you're playing, I'm going to be able to decipher what you do on the flop moving forward, what that means. You know what I mean? I mean, there's still, there's a consistency there, but that also is also very telling to me as a player watching you. If every single time you raise preflop and then you miss the flop, you do this, and every time you raise preflop and you hit the flop, you do this. If you do the same thing all the way through.
That's why you need to be consistent with that first bet on flop as well, too. And eventually, you know, once you get past that, then the play changes, and that's where really good players are going to figure out what you're doing, because you have to change at that point. But,
which is why all the money is won on the turn, which is why people float you all the time, because they want to figure out you don't have the balls to follow through again on the turn when you miss, unless you've hit it. So then they know, and then they just, you know, raise you. So, or bet. So that's why it's such a difficult game. That's why I think you need to incorporate limping into your game sometimes, just because otherwise they're going to figure out just one street later. You know, I agree with you about the benefits of raising. I mean, obviously you and I have been doing this for so long. we know, but I'm just saying.
Well,
I just,
particularly six-handed, too. I think that's the other thing, too, because, you know, in six-handed, to be successful in six-handed, you have to widen your range. You know, you can't play a 10-handed game and be successful at six-handed, right?
Yeah.
So when you're widening your range now as an opponent, you want to get fewer opponents, even more so than I think in a 10-handed, because everybody's playing a wider range, so it gets harder to narrow that range on flops. So the more you can get heads up in six-handed, I think it's even more important than 10-handed. So that's one more reason why I'm more aggressive in raising, and probably why I'm not surprised to hear that three bets are not uncommon here in this game, because I think generally that's the case in six-handed. Because then, I mean, you're really trying to force out those weaker hands that you're not going to be able to put on ranges. And, you know, if we get some kind of weird, junky flop here, I'm more scared about that in a six-handed game than I am in a 10-handed game.
So you're leaning toward folding, and I'm leaning toward limping or folding, but neither of us are considering raising.
Folding only on my personal attachment to this hand.
Right, well, that's what we're doing, though, right? I mean, we're telling them how we would play, so we give them a different perspective, not on how the general public would play.
I would say if you don't have the Achilles heel for Jack 10 that I would, I would be raising with this 100% of the time.
Okay, so you would raise if you weren't so cautious about this hand and in your personal experience.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, I like the general rule is that if you're first to enter the pot, you're going to raise. But there are scenarios in my mind where we're shorthanded. These guys are kicking my butt. I'm down a bunch. It, you know, who knows? They may, you know, use that against me, whatever. So if I can get in for a cheap flop and then maybe build a pot, maybe I'll try that too. So there are times where I'd mix it up. But generally, yes, first to enter a pot, I'm raising.
And I would say this too. If you're going to limp, and put that into your game, and I fully respect yet you think that should be part of your game, you need to limp with multiple different kinds of hands.
Yes.
Because that way they don't know. So, I mean, if you're only limping with like a small pair that you're worried about getting re-raised, or limping with Jack 10 because you're worried about getting re-raised, and you don't do that with aces and kings, people are going to notice that, and that's the tell you're trying to avoid, right? So if you are limping, but you're limping with multiple different kinds of hands, then it... You negate that whole thing that I'm talking about, right? Because now they don't know what you have. Because if you've shown down aces and you've shown down trays from limping, right, then they're not going to know what you have at that point. So,
and I mean, that's generally where the term set mining comes from. You don't generally raise to set mine. You call a raise or you limp to set mine. So, I mean, people do it. And I'm not saying we have a, you know, a pair here. I'm just saying there are reasons to limp. There are people who limp. If somebody limps ahead of you, you know, and you have Jack 10, you might consider limping because you're not first into the pot, you know. So there are reasons to it.
That's a different story.
Right, exactly. And I'm just saying, I don't want it to be a blanket description now of, oh, every time there's Jack 10 in my hand, I got to raise or fold it. No, there are reasons to call with Jack 10, especially with two people limped ahead of you. Now you've got tons of odds and you got better position on them. A call is perfectly reasonable there. But in this case, you're the first to enter in a six-handed pot. You know, generally you're going to raise. Me, I'm just saying you're down a bunch. These guys seem to be playing better than you this week. Maybe you try to see a cheap flop because you're already down a bunch. And a lot of people will do that. When they're down a bunch of money, they're like, they're just trying to see a flop. They're trying to make magic happen without it costing them too much. They're looking for a bargain. That's why people clip coupons, because they don't have a lot of money. You know, so same thing here. You know, I know we talked a lot about this, but our shows have been shorter lately. So a nice little discussion about a hand is good, I think.
No, that's great.
All right.
All right, our hero limps, so he's taking Chris's advice.
Wow.
Under the gun plus one limps two, the small blind calls and the big blind checks. So no raising in this hand.
Wow.
And four of us go to see the flop. Now, he said, I would normally fold this at a fold table and generally raise when I'm first to enter the pot. However, since three bets are not too uncommon in this game and I don't mind either playing against multiple players or don't mind a raise, I'd like to limp and plan on calling any reasonable bet and will proceed with caution. All right. Well thought out, so let's see what happens. $2 in the pot. The flop is the nine of spades, jack of diamonds, four of spades, both blinds check, and it's on us.
Well, we hit top pair, but this is the thing. Well, if they're limping, we have to think that we probably have the best hand, or at least the top pair. You would think that if somebody had something better than jacks with a 10 kicker, they might have raised with it, but they could have queen jack. They could be limping with queen jack. But I like betting here. I don't let those spades get there. I don't let the straight get there for a cheap price. I want to put some money out there, and if I take down the $2, well, all right, it wasn't a big pot, but, you know, I generally bet, you know, if it's $2, I'll bet like $1.30 or something here, you know, because, you know, I mean, you could bet the full pot amount if you want to, if you're really worried about draws, especially since they all limped. The other thing you have to fear now is guys limping with baby pairs like fours, and they're checking to you because they think that, you know, they've hit a set and they don't want, you know, you to get away for whatever. So they'll let you bet, or they'll let you make think that they're weak. So there's a lot going on here, but I do feel like you got to put some money out there to kind of thin the field. So I don't know, $2. Let's see, is in the pot. So $1.30, $1.25, something like that.
Yeah, I definitely think you need to bet here. I mean, we've got a hand. We have to figure out where we are right now. You're right. You have to make those draws pay to stay long. And, of course, I want to give John Cusack $2 so he can pay the newspaper boys. So if I win the pot right now, mission accomplished, right? So,
yeah.
But, no, yeah, definitely have to bet. I would probably bet half the pot here, a dollar. But I like it a little bit larger one. It's fine with me, too. I can't bet anything less than a dollar here.
No way.
All right, we bet $2. So we bet the pot, under the gun plus one, and the big blind call. Wow, so pot-sized bet gets two callers on this flop.
You know, and that's when it gets to be, are these guys calling because it's such pitiful stakes? Or are they calling because they've got a legitimate hand and they can see us bleeding and they think if we make two pair and they make a straight or something that they're going to, you know what I mean? This is why the game is so hard to master. You never can, because you don't know what's in their head. And now, like I said, you're playing for 25-cent 50 game. This is a small game, even though you're down a bunch. You know, $2 to somebody is nothing unless it's a kid on a bike. So, you know what I mean? So you don't really know.
Switch plate comb, man. It's scary.
And this gets a little bit back to what Michael Cantor is experiencing. You know, he's playing online, but he doesn't know if he should play in like a free thing where he thinks the players take it seriously. But, you know, let's admit it. I mean, they take PAPE seriously, but if they're going to not take something seriously, it's also going to happen in PAPEs. You know what I mean? So, because it's not going to cost them anything except, you know, bragging rights or something. So in this case, it only costs you $2 to call to try to really hit that, you know, that open-ended or whatever. So it's tough. What are you going to do? Overbet the pot to win $2? I mean, we're being ridiculous here. So this is why I also kind of like limping and stuff, because the pot's small. You keep it small. You make small bets, you know, whatever. And then, but in this case, you know, overbetting the pot would be silly, you know, but at the same time, it's only $2. You know, so it's tough to really know what they have for hands here. You got rid of somebody, but you can't really narrow their range because it's $2, you know? Yeah. So I don't know what to think about the calls.
I mean, there's still an argument to made argument to be made that regardless of stakes, that you play proper poker, right? So, you know, a pot-sized bet is a large bet here, and the fact that two callers got it in a real game would be real concern to me. I would have to wonder what's going on here. In this game, it's possible that these folks are just calling because it's $2, and you know they make $80,000 a year, so $2 is nothing to them, right? So if that's the case, then I can dismiss that. But if folks in this game are playing proper, I'm a little concerned about two callers with a pot size bet here. You know, we could be sitting on a set here, which would be unfortunate. So our hero says, I'm betting here to start defining ranges and hopefully thin the field. While this may seem like a large bet in this game, anything smaller would likely get called by everyone. Okay, so there's part of our answer, right?
Yeah.
So we have to bet that big because people don't value the actual odds. They're looking more just the bet size, right? And the fact that $2 is not a big deal to them. So that helps now, right? I think.
I agree. Right. I agree.
$8 in the pot, and the turn is the 10 of spades. So our board now is 9 of spades, jack of diamonds, 4 of spades, 10 of spades, big blind checks, and it's on us. And this is where the wheels come off in Scott's jack 10 pursuit.
Exactly. This is why Scott folds at pre-flop. Because he's hit his two pair, but now all the spades got there, all the straights got there.
Yep.
You know, somebody limped with, you know, queen, king. If somebody limped with 8-7. I mean, it's all there. And then if somebody has two spades and they're just calling because they have baby spades and they want to go crazy with it, that's there. So you have two pair. Yay. Top two. Yay. Well, not really. And again, there's $8 in the pot. I mean, normally at this point, you'd bet half the pot. But at the same time, if somebody doesn't have the spades and somebody doesn't have you beat, you don't want to give them a free pass to hit the fourth spade. You know, so you got to bet again, I think.
Or the fourth card for their straight.
And the fourth for the straight. So, I mean, seriously, I just don't, I don't see how you don't bet here.
Yeah, well, I'll give you a case as to why I would not bet here. You're right. There's a lot of danger in having this check around and giving both two opponents a free card, where pretty much any card that comes now is going to be horrible for us, with the exception of a jack or a 10. So at this point, you know, we did our best to shake these folks with our flop bet. Two of them, the two in the hand, were not shakeable. And so here we are with a card that improved our hand but did not improve our odds of winning the pot, right? So at this point, I would be happy to check here. Hope it gets checked behind so I get a free card to try to boat up and feel more confident about this. And if it checks around again on the river and my two pairs is somehow good, well, hey, that's great too. But I'm really, really scared about putting a bet in here and either being called or raised at this point. I mean, neither one of them is good for me, I don't think. So,
I want to know what you're going to do when we check and they bet.
I think it depends on the bet. In this game, I'm going to assume it sounds like the bets are bigger than they should be. And I don't think I can call a bigger bet here.
So you have top two, you check, somebody bets $4, and you fold.
Probably, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, see, that's what I mean. That's what's so hard about playing these smaller stakes, too, because for me, I'd be like, I'm down 160. What's four more? You know, maybe I'll boat up, and they'll have their flush, and then I'll get, you know what I mean? And to me, and I agree, and it's probably a leak in my game. But in this case, I have top two, and I'm folding. You know, I mean, it's a wet board, but I can't be afraid of monsters under the bed either.
It's not a wet board. It's a tsunami board. I mean, you've got spades, you've got and common straight cards there too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in a six-handed game, I would not be surprised if someone has 7-8 here. Certainly would not be surprised if somebody has king-queen here. So, and if one of them has king-queen with, like, a spade in that hand too, I mean, that's super powerful now, right? So you're not scared about really anything coming at that point. So normally, yeah, top two, I'm feeling pretty good. But this board, there's just so much danger out there. And the fact that they both called on the flop, so I'm still not discounting that there's a set out there that's probably also scared now, right? So, but that has us beat too. So
interesting. Yeah, I don't know what I would do. I think I would check call and then make that determination on the river as to whether or not I'm beat. You know what I mean? It just seems like somebody could just steal this pot from us with the top pair. You know, sure. We have two pairs.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we're not in position. So, I mean, at the end of the gun plus one, who's been described as a villain, you know, I would probably do that. If I was the end of the gun plus one and checks around, I think I'd have to put in a bet just to see if everybody's scared, right? That's a different story because you're the last act there. So,
we say this every week too. All the more reason to never play a hand unless you're in decent position, you know, because This is what you're up against. When you play speculative hands on top of it, you're not playing hands of power where you could just end the hand after the flop. Here, you really couldn't end the hand with just top pair, third kicker, or whatever. You know, you need to be cautious, and you don't have all the information that you can have with all the other people betting ahead of you. You have to go first all the time. This is what was horrible. I mean, I realized there were the blind in there the first go around, but now you're first to act and. This is just so wet and
And here's the where I think people get in trouble with Jack 10, including myself, is the Jack 10 is a powerful hand for straights and in this case flushes. And really the flush you're not too excited about necessarily, but it's a hand you play for straights. It's not a hand you play for single pair, double pair. If you get lucky and get trips, all right, that's a different story, but you know, if this is ace queen and there's an ace queen on the board, I would feel much different than having a jack 10 two pair. So yeah. That's my concern here. We're sandwiched in between two opponents that are not giving us a lot of information.
Board is really super scary. I mean, I'm quite happy to have it checked around here and hope the boat up. And if not, we'll see what happens at that point. But if someone bats, I guess I'll consider what it is. But 4 hours is probably the most I can see myself calling here.
Yeah.
All right. So we check and under the gun plus one checks. So checks around. So all right. And our hero says, "Well, I turned two pair and a lot of draws get there, so I decided to check for pot control. Additionally, the big blind is a tricky player who's been known to check raise scary cards." All right, so even more reason at this point. So,
okay, so we had under the gun plus one checked, and then there's another person in the hand, right?
No, it's just the three of us now. So,
yeah, the three of us. So there's, who acted first? Us?
Big blind.
Oh, I'm sorry, the guy was still in the hand. I forgot he was still in the hand. Okay. All right, so we're all checked around. That's good and bad.
Yes, it is, right? Yeah. So, I mean, this is what I was hoping for. I'm hoping for that free card to hit my jack and 10. And if I don't get it, then I just kind of need to I really have to hope that it checks around again and my two pair happens to be good. I'm really going to have trouble putting money in this pot if I don't improve here. So, all right, the pot's still $8. The river is the six of hearts, so our final board is nine of spades, jack of diamonds, four of spades, ten of spades, six of hearts, big blind checks, and back on us.
This is where it gets difficult because, well, one, we know the guy after us is the villain, so it's a problem. But if somebody, the guy after us, already had the made hand, would he really check unless, like, if he had a set, I don't see him checking there. I think he's going to protect against four flushes and four straights.
Sure.
Yeah. And if he's worried about somebody already having that, well, he's got the river to boat up. So I still think he bets there. So I don't know if that guy has us beat. The other guy checks. I can't imagine him, if he went and checked around, if you're the first person to act, you're going to want to get money now. So why would you have checked again on the river? So I don't think the first guy has us beat.
Excellent points. Yep, absolutely. Right?
So I would think that we need to bet. Right? Wouldn't you think you need to bet here? So I would bet because I don't want the guy to steal it behind me either.
Exactly. I think that's the two things I was thinking about, the same things you thought about, that there's really no good reason for the undergun to check behind on that scary board. And so, I mean, if he has any vulnerable hand, he absolutely had to bet there. And you're right, the big blind could have checked that turn because it's a different story out of position. But now on the river, he's got a hand. And that six of hearts doesn't change anything, I don't think, right?
No, it can't.
7-8 was already there on the street.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it changes nothing. So at that point, the big blind, if he had anything, would have had to bet. So yeah, I think this is good deductive reasoning that the first bet should win. Obviously, I think we've been telegraphed there's a villain here, so it's probably not going to work out.
Right.
But in a non-telegraphed information hand, I think the deductive reasoning there is, we have to put a bet in here.
Okay, well, I mean, all right. Would bet, but I don't know what it would be. It'd be whatever I would have bet on the turn when I didn't bet, so maybe $3 or $4.
Well, yeah, and the way that this game seems to be over betting, I think maybe six even, maybe it's probably what it needs to be. But you know, if no one has anything, $4 is going to be enough, right? And if they have something and raise you, then, I mean, I don't think you can really get away from it. Maybe, I guess it depends what the raise is, but at least you have the option of getting away with it and saving some money.
Okay.
All right. We bet $6.66. Devilish bet.
Wow.
And he says, bet sizing like this is something I do in this game for fun. I do that too.
With nines.
And the under the gun min raises to 13.32. Let's see. Then he has some. All right, so hold on. He has some commentary. He doesn't tell me what's going to do here. So let me figure out.
So we are min raised. So let's see.
Exactly what the big blind does because he skipped right to his.
Yeah, so the big blind folds.
Assume the big blind folds.
Yeah, the big blind has to fold. So there's 18 plus 8. So now there's 26 in the pot. We have to call $6 to win 26 with top two.
Yep.
We're already down a bunch, but I can't see myself folding with top two.
Yeah, for those odds, top two, you got to call it.
Yeah, I'm going to call it.
I mean, and it's probably a really good bet on the part of the end, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, at that point, I mean, you're a losing player if you don't call this bet here, I think, in the long run.
Yeah.
All right, here it says, when the river blanks, I would expect the big blind to bet if he had hit the flush. When he checks, I decide to try to get value for my two pairs. I figured under the gun would have bet the turn if he had made the flush. Look at that.
Yeah, that's weird.
It's like he knew what we were going to say, Chris.
That's weird. And I don't have this hand in front of me either. So that we don't. I mean, you do. I don't have the hand. I don't have these hands, so...
He says, villain's check raise worries me because it looks so much like a value bet. I lose to a flush or king, queen, and 7-8, although I don't expect him to have that too often. I don't think he would raise with his one pair hands, but he may with a hand like jack 10 or 10-9. I need to call 666 to win 21-32, so I'm getting over 3-1 on the call. I think for a bit and make the call, thinking he can't always have the nuts. He flips over the king of spades, eight of spades, for the turned... He says straight, but that's flush.
Yeah, right? Flush. That's brutal. So what we usually do is we look at this hand again. So we limped. So this guy felt emboldened to limp with a suited king like Scott would do in 2003. And then, right, so everyone else gets to limp. And the flop comes with two spades, so he's in the hand. And no reason to raise with that when you flop a flush draw. Second on flush draw, you might as well call. The turn, yep. He gets there and checks around. That's the thing that baffles me, because now another spade gives the random ace of spades that's out there the better hand. I don't know why he doesn't value bet there, but he gets more money out of it, so it worked out for
well,
him.
Well, I mean, all right, so here's the thing. I mean, I guess I could defend that, because now, I mean, think back to what we discussed about why we bet the river, right? Part of the reason we bet the river was because Undergun Plus One checked that turn, right?
Right.
So yeah, you're right. You risk the naked ace getting there on the river, but really, I think overall it's a value move to check there and induce a bet from someone. More often than not, that's going to happen, and you're going to profit from it, which is exactly what he did. And then he very smartly he didn't get greedy here. He min raised, knowing that it was really impossible for us to get away from this hand for a min raise, right? So, I mean, he squeezed another 13-32 out of this hand that had he bet on the flop, I'm sure we all would have folded, right?
So let's put on our 2020 vision goggles and go back in history and play it like Scott Long, which would be, if you're going to play it for a raise, because right. You probably get the king eight out and you've narrowed the field. Then when you hit your jack, you feel emboldened to bet it, because while there might be draws out there, generally people calling raises aren't calling them with drawing hands. They're usually... calling them with bigger hands or better hands, unless there's a ton of people in the pot, then they'll call with drawing hands. So if you played it like me and you limp like he did, you let king eight in there for a cheap price. Then when the flop came, right, we bet pot, which was fine, but you're playing piddly stakes, so people can call, and this guy's going to call no matter what you bet anyway, because he's got king eight spades. So he's got a backdoor straight draw and the second nut flush draw, and you're never going to put him on a king eight, which you didn't. And then on the turn, you know, he gets there and he checks. He's tricky. So you got to remember that too, that when flushes get there, you know, on the turn, this guy could actually wake up with a hand. So,
sure. Man.
But that's why we raise almost always when we're entering a pot. And I tend to limp more than I want to when I enter pots. And this is one of the reasons why you shouldn't. So don't do like me, do like Scott.
For this time only.
Yeah. So we're 1/10 of the way. He may turn around. If we're still around, the show's still going 10 weeks from now. But for now, he's still down, and we're hoping that Jerry rallies. All right, so thanks for sending that in, Jerry. Looking forward to next week's. I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Anti-Up is a production of antiupmagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.